This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. There are now three certainties: death, taxes, and in North Carolina, by the end of this legislative session, there will be a new tax code. What is uncertain is just how it will be structured. There are three plans currently making their way through the Capitol, two in the Senate in a committee, one passed the House yesterday. WRAL Capitol Bureau Chief Laura Leslie's been covering the story closely, and she's with me today. Hello, Laura.
Hi, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. The House tax plan just passed yesterday. Tell us about that one.
Well, what it does is it would lower the income tax rate, which is currently, you know, we have three tiers in North Carolina, 6% and then 6.75 and then 7.75. And that top rate is I think the highest in the Southeast, if not the highest in the second. What this would do is lower it all to a flat rate of 5.9% for income tax. It would also expand the sales tax to a few more services, things that are related to tangible personal products, like, for example, the installation and delivery of appliances or labor that a mechanic does on your car. These things together, they say, are going to lower the corporate income tax over the next 4 years from 6.9 to 5.4%. So the idea is that this is going to stimulate the economy, put more money back in people's pockets, supporters say, and make the state more competitive with its surrounding states in the Southeast.
Now, this plan would also see a reduction in overall revenue, something like maybe $1.1 billion over 5 years, something like that?
Well, it's actually gotten a little more expensive, as these things tend to do. They were going to start out with it not costing anything, and now it's up to $1.6 billion over 5 years.
All right. So not revenue neutral. There's going to be a broader tax, a sales tax rate, including services, and a flat rate of 5.9%, reducing that top rate substantially.
Right.
Governor McCrory likes this one, right?
Well, he said he likes this one, and there's also a plan in the Senate that is the bipartisan plan, as they put it, Klobuchar-Hartzell plan, that is kind of similar to the House's plan, and actually doesn't cost anything, apparently, so far that we've figured out. So he's actually in favor of either of those two. He's a little worried about the third plan, which is the Senate leadership plan. It's run by Senator Bob Rucho of Mecklenburg County, that would apply the sales tax to a lot more things, including groceries and prescriptions. I think that one, Governor McCrory just signaled he thinks may be going too far.
All right. And that one, as you said, sponsored by Bob Rucho, who is the chair of the Finance Committee, and it is still in that committee. So what's the hang up?
Well, that's a good question. We still don't know a lot of the details of the bill. They said it's been in process. They've been working on it for months. We get a little piece of it here and a little piece of it there, but we just haven't seen the whole thing rolled out as a package. This is something, actually, they're going to be hearing some presentations about later today, or I should say on Tuesday afternoon in Senate Finance. They'll be hearing from some experts about the basic theories of tax reform and how it's supposed to work.
All right. Well, let's talk about that Senate plan, the Rucho plan, the one that is not bipartisan, right? And that is
right.
The one that has really the biggest cuts. We're talking about a gradual decrease it's a flat rate. So all three plans go from a three-tiered system to a flat rate. The House would be close to 6%, 5.95. That's still in the bill?
5.9, yeah.
5.9. The Senate bill, 4.5% would be the top with the only rate, right, for personal income tax.
Right. The Senate goes further than that Rucho plan goes further than the other two in cutting down on the income tax and expanding the sales tax base. Now, where the House and the Klobuchar plan both say, you know, we'll expand it to a few services that are things that are attached to tangible goods, the Rucho plan basically goes whole hog. Anywhere from 130 to 160 new services would be taxed. Anything that gets taxed in another state, any other state, would be eligible on the board for being taxed here in North Carolina. And, you know, again, the logic behind that is that, you know, you're taxing consumption. It's more stable when you make it as broad as you possibly can. And that allows for cuts, as we said, in that income tax rate to go further down and the corporate tax as well.
And an overall loss to the state treasury over 3 years, about $1 billion still?
Something along those lines, yeah. Although, again, because we don't have all the details yet, it's very difficult to say exactly. You know, trying to estimate the cost of these things is just sort of like a science in itself, and trying to estimate the impact of them as well, you know, just because you've got different groups that give you different figures. They're sort of basing their estimates on different distributional analyses. They're trying to guess what kind of, you know, what behavior consumers will display. It's really maybe more of an art than a science.
Right. Well, it's a dynamic process. What are people going to do with that money that they wouldn't have had? What is it, how does it affect sales to know that sales taxes have gone up, et cetera? So let's talk a little bit more about that, because while almost everybody agrees the tax system in North Carolina needs reform, lots of different ideas about how to do it. And my next guests have both analyzed the tax plans now before the legislature. And they're happy to talk about it. John Hood, president of the John Locke Foundation. Farrell Guillory, a professor of the practice of journalism and director of the program of public life at the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Welcome back to both of you. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
John Hood at John Locke, tell us about this. A lot of attempts to reform taxes in North Carolina. Why do we need to do that? What's the need right now in North Carolina?
Well, the primary need is economic. North Carolina has a poorly performing economy. It's not a new thing. It didn't happen just at the beginning of the Great Recession in 2007. North Carolina's underperformance versus the national economy actually began roughly in the mid-90s. So even when we were growing, our per capita incomes, per capita GDP was not growing as rapidly as the rest of the country. There are many reasons for that. It would be silly to deny other causes. I also think it's silly to deny that tax policy has a role in that scenario. So I think the main reason to do it is to strengthen our economic base, make us more competitive, and increase the rate of growth over time. In addition, there are inequities. There's instability. When you're trying to rely on taxes with fairly narrow bases, you end up bouncing around a lot. And in particular with the income tax, if you don't distinguish between wage income and income from investment, income from investment tends to bounce around a great deal, and it creates additional volatility in revenue. So those things are some of the reasons, and that's why people have been trying to reform the tax code for decades.
Farrell Guillory, what would be your goal in reforming this tax code? As we say, everybody thinks it needs to be changed, but what would you like to see happen as a result?
Well, I come with a couple of concepts in mind. One is, introduced me generously, and I appreciate it. In addition to my work at UNC Chapel Hill, I'm a senior fellow at MDC in Durham that does community economic development. And back in 2002, in our State of the South report, we had a section on there on the need for tax modernization, we called it. And so one thing I think that what we had in mind in terms of tax modernization was that the tax systems in the South, in the southern states, but and including North Carolina, had gotten out of alignment with the way the economy really works. We are less a manufacturing, less a goods producing economy, more a service economy. So we didn't write a tax plan for all the states, but we said we need to rethink the way the economy works, so that we've got different forms of corporations. So if we're going to do taxes on corporation, we need to think about how to do that. Same thing with the personal income tax, because many businesses now, the owners pay taxes as their personal income tax. And on the sales tax side, we do need to reach into more services, because that's where the economy is. That's where the transaction takes place. So that's the first thing. Second thing I would say is I think it's important to sustain a sense of what is known as progressivity in the tax code. And so flattening the income tax in particular gives me pause, because there's a value to our society to have those of greater means bear a somewhat larger share. I'm not saying that people should be absolved from contributing through their taxes to the work of society, but I do think that we need somewhat more graduation in terms of not simply rates, but in the burdens that people pay.
Well, let's ask John Hood about that. Is a flat tax is inherently regressive? Is that a bad thing? You would say it's not?
Well, a flat tax isn't inherently regressive at all. It depends on how you structure it. Actually, a flat tax is not an amount of money that everybody pay. Everybody pay $500 is not a flat tax. A flat tax is everybody pays a certain percentage of their income. So if loosely speaking, if I made twice as much money as you did, and I don't because you work on public radio.
No,
you
know, I got a lot more money.
You're rolling in it. Yeah. But if I made twice as much money, then I would pay about twice as much in tax. That's what a flat tax actually means. The way you avoid regressivity problems with something like a flat tax is you use standard deductions or exemptions or credits to shield some of the income of all households up to a certain amount. So people who are relatively low income, they're only paying that flat tax on a portion of their income. Someone who's making $200,000 is paying the flat tax on virtually all of their income. So you can actually have a graduated burden.
Is that happening
at
in any
a flat
of these bills?
Rate? In this bill, the flat tax will generate a somewhat progressive burden in the income tax.
Which bill? You're talking about the House bill? Which bill?
Any
there are three of them.
Any of them, because right. they all have a flat rate, but right. also broader exemptions, deductions, or credits. So if the income tax alone is all you're looking at, they still, all of them, generate a higher effective tax burden for wealthy people than poor people, even with a flat rate, because not all of your income is being subjected to the rate. The problem you have with regressivity is when you add other taxes in, like the sales tax. If you're broadening the sales tax, people at lower incomes tend to spend a higher percentage of their income. So that's where you have to work on offsetting the effects of sales tax expansion. I would argue the House does a fairly good job of that. The Senate leadership plan did not do as good a job of that.
Let's take a break right here and come back and talk some more. John Hood is president of the John Locke Foundation. Farrell Guillory, a professor of the practice of journalism at UNC Chapel Hill. Laura Leslie, WRAL's Capital Bureau Chief. And we'll talk with a couple of economists about the changes in the tax code on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow, today talking about three different tax overhaul plans in the North Carolina State Legislature. Laura Leslie is WRAL's Capital Bureau Chief. John Hood is president of the John Locke Foundation. Farrell Guillory is a professor in the practice of journalism, director of a program of public life at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Now to talk with a couple of economists. Roby Sawyers is a professor in the Poole College of Management at North Carolina State University. Stanley Black is an emeritus professor of economics at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Roby and Stanley, welcome to both of you.
Thank you. Hello.
Roby, let me ask you first what you think of how you look at all three of these tax plans. Much difference between them and among them, and how do you feel about them?
Well, I really prefer to concentrate on the similarities of the plans rather than the differences. I think all attempt to do the same basic thing, and that's reduce our individual income tax rate, reduce the corporate tax rate, and expand the sales tax. Now, the devil's in the details with respect to those specific differences, but they all do, I think, really attempt to do the same thing, and that is what economists and accountants and others have been calling for a long time.
One of the most controversial elements of the Senate leadership plan is the fact that it will raise sales taxes to 6.5%, up from about 2% on food and medicine, and that seems highly regressive. People who are at the lower income levels pay a much bigger percentage of their income on food and medicine, and that seems to put a disproportionate burden on them. How do you feel about that?
Well, as John mentioned earlier, it can be regressive, but it depends on the specifics and how the mechanisms and how it actually is put in place. I always say if I can afford to buy a $20 a pound aged ribeye at Whole Foods, why should I be exempt from paying a $1.40 sales tax on that? Shouldn't the $1.40 that I pay be then used to help reduce the regressivity that a lower income person might face?
Well, I guess that the answer is that $200,000 a year, the impact of $1.40 on you is far less significant than somebody who's making $30,000 a year. And the difference between the $1.40 on the expensive cut and maybe 90 cents on the cheap hamburger is pretty marginal.
Well, again, you've got to find mechanisms to really reduce that regressivity. So some way to give that money back to a lower income person that would be harmed by taxing the food, for example. So I don't necessarily support the tax on food, but at the same time, I don't mind it either, as long as you accompany it with something that would reduce the regressivity.
All right. Stanley, how do you feel about these three bills?
Well, I have fairly serious problems with them. I think they're, to call them tax reform, and to me, is a bit of a misnomer. We need more revenue in this state, not less, and most of these, it looks like the primary bills are going to generate considerably less revenue. We have needs that are not being met in the area of roads, in the area of mental health, in the area of schools, which are seeing their support cut back. And the state is growing economically, and so it needs more infrastructure spending and more spending of various kinds to deal with increasing needs. And these bills are not going to provide that. Secondly, I do favor the, in principle, broadening the sales tax for the same reasons Farrell Guillory does, that our economy has moved more towards a service-based economy, and if we wind up just taxing goods, we're not getting a broadly based sales tax, which is more efficient and raises more revenue. The third thing I have a problem with is the flat tax, which has been advocated already here, but to me, asking the rich and poor to say, pay the same tax rate is basically a mistake. It asks different levels of sacrifice from people. It asks for the same proportionate sacrifice from people at different levels of income, and I think the old story of the widow's mite should make us think a little bit about that. She contributed just a little bit. The Pharisee contributed a lot, but the sacrifice to her was much greater than the sacrifice to the Pharisee. And so if we remember that story, it will tell us that we should ask for a higher tax rate from people at higher income levels than we do for people at lower income levels. And what this whole proposal is doing is shifting the burden away from people at the higher income brackets and towards those at the lower level, because it shifts more towards, first of all, it removes the progressivity from the income tax, and secondly, it relies more heavily on the sales tax, which, as has been pointed out, is more regressive.
Well, what about that, Roby Sawyer? Certainly, if you have more income, 5% of your income represents more in nominal dollars. More dollars will go into the Treasury. But the impact on you, the impact on what you do with your money at $200,000, you're still saving money. You still have money at the end of the month. At $30,000, the impact of you, the widow's mite, if you will, is more profound at 5% compared to the impact on someone at higher levels. Shouldn't that count for something in our tax code? And don't we need to take account of that, Roby Sawyers?
No, I think exactly. You're right. We do need to take into account the overall impacts on regressivity that these bills might cause. I just think there are mechanisms that we could use to take that into account. So, you know, as John mentioned, there's nothing outright wrong with having a flat rate, as long as, in my opinion, that you adjust for that regressivity through other mechanisms. Now, it's not clear that our legislature will do that, so I have a problem there as well.
Well, Laura Leslie, let me ask you, and I know these tax codes are complex bundles of information with all kinds of provisions, but I wonder if anyone in their testimony and in the hearings over this has pointed to particular parts of the legislation that would, in fact, compensate people for the regressivity that's inherent in the simple flat tax.
Well, as your other guests were saying, there is all three plans increase what is the standard deduction, the amount of earned income you can have before you start having to pay a tax on it. The House, I think, it probably increases it the most. It doubles it, too. I think it's up to $12,000 for a married couple filing jointly, and there's also deductions you can take for charitable contributions and things like that. In terms of dealing with the regressivity of sales tax, or a flat tax for that matter, a lot of folks would probably say that one way to do that is the earned income tax credit. And North Carolina currently has one that's sunsetting, that basically is a way that people who have income get money back from the state and the federal government, and it's refundable, actually. You can get money back, a check back. Progressives say that that's a way to sort of reimburse people at the bottom of the income ladder for the sales taxes that they pay that constitute more of a portion of their income than at the higher end.
But right now, reenacting that is not part of any one of these codes.
Right now, that is not part. And the Republicans' leadership have been fairly, they have not wavered on this. They do not intend to reenact the EITC. That would, of course, as Democrats point out, be one way to deal with the regressivity issue. I mean, you've got this standard deduction at the bottom, which is great, but if you're not a household that's earning income, that doesn't really help you. You're still going to pay more sales tax.
Well, Robesohrs, I want to ask you something else that Stanley Black said at the beginning of his response, and that is that, you know, neither of these of the two most likely packages, the Senate leadership package and the House package, is revenue neutral. Both of them result in a loss of revenue, budget cuts, essentially. Do you think that whatever new tax plan there is should be revenue neutral?
Yeah, I really do. Most of the tax reform commissions in the past have called for reform that would at least in the short run be revenue neutral or close to revenue neutral. You know, I think the good thing about these plans, even though they may not be revenue neutral in the short run, is there is the promise of economic growth as a result of some of these tax reductions that might increase revenue down the road. And I think this is tax reform that will end up with less volatility than we currently have, you know, a more stable, more predictable source of tax revenue for the state. So it's a political decision as to exactly how much revenue is raised, but you know, my goal is a more stable, less volatile sources of revenue, regardless of what that amount of revenue is set at with the rates.
Well, Stanley Black, you've heard Robesohrs say it, that this should in the end amount to more revenue because of greater economic development and greater productivity. Is that a premise? Should we accept that premise, that cutting taxes?
I don't believe we can count on that economic growth that they're talking about. The evidence for lower tax rates generating higher economic growth is very slim. It's based on hoped-for responses, and there is very little evidence to support the idea that lowering tax rates raises growth. In fact, if you'll all remember, in the 1990s, President Clinton raised tax rates in the federal economy, and the economic growth actually rose significantly over that time as interest rates came down. So I think the effect of tax rates on growth is vastly exaggerated.
John Hood, what about that? I mean, there was a time when if you left wealthy people with a little more money, they're not going to spend any more at $200,000 a year, but you're going to invest. And there was a time when that meant investing in the American economy. We're now living in a global economy. A lot of your investment will now go overseas. Does money really stay here if I leave it with people who are not going to spend more, but in fact invest?
Well, I'd turn it around and say that's our problem now is that North Carolina, if you think about our state and federal taxes together on investment income, compare that to the rest of the world, we're one of the highest taxed places to put your money, so people put it elsewhere. Actually, just in the last few years, there have been a number of academic studies, American Economic Review, Contemporary Economic Policy, Southern Economics Journal, many studies finding relationships between state tax policy or government tax policy in general and economic growth. Now, obviously, there are people who oversell this point. They argue that if you cut taxes, the revenue will immediately recover and it won't cost anything. I mean, they make hocus-pocus sorts of arguments. But it is not the consensus of folks who study state economic policy that taxes have no effect on economic growth. Really, it has to do with balancing the various benefits of lower taxes, lower regulations, better schools, better roads. I would argue that North Carolina is out of balance and that one of the ways to get North Carolina competitive is to address our tax issues as the legislature is doing.
Well, Farrell Guillory, let's talk about one of those aspects that, you know, one of the many reasons businesses and people move here is because of infrastructure, is because of schools and roads and that kind of intellectual as well as material infrastructure, which usually comes from public dollars. I mean,
yeah.
How does that work together?
Yeah, let me this is an important question. I grew up in Louisiana. Much of the time I was growing up, Russell Long was the United States Senator's chair of the Finance Committee, son of Huey Long, the great populist. Russell was much less populist than his dad. And during the time he was chair of the Finance Committee, he used to say tax reform to most people meant don't tax you, don't tax me, tax the fellow behind the tree. And we are all behind a tree in this society. And so I think that we have to think about taxes not only in how they affect an individual but how they affect the society at large. There's a great debate. You've just heard it here between Stan and John over the stimulative effect of cutting taxes. My own view is that's a contested issue. And I think if the legislature goes much further in cutting taxes as a way to stimulate the economy, they will take a big risk and a big bet that something will happen. I don't think we can say that the collapse of the old textile industry, the collapse of the old furniture industry, the shift in tobacco that used to be the pillars of our economy changed because of our tax structure. And we have diversified in financial services, banking, biotechnology, pharmaceutical manufacturing with the tax system before the current changes. So I think we need to be humble in a way in the state to say that huge changes in our tax system, given that we're a global economy, are going to have at best marginal effects, and at the risk of depriving public services, particularly schools, of the resources needed to sustain a high mm-hmm. quality of life. And so I think that's, this is not just a tax issue. This is an issue about the kind of governance we're going to have in this.
Kind of governance, kind of services, but also getting back to this question of what stimulates the economy more efficiently. Roby Sawyers, let me put that question to you a different way. Again, at $200,000, if I save $1,200 in taxes, if my taxes go down by that much, I'm not going to buy another flat screen. I've got enough. I have all the food I'm going to eat. So I'm going to give it to my broker, and my broker's going to put it in mutual funds. They're looking for highest return on investment. They're going to China. They're going to India, where labor costs and environmental controls are much cheaper. So they're leaving the state when I save money. If I raise taxes, we're laying off teachers now. I could hire a few more teachers. And at $40,000 and $50,000 a year, they're going to spend that money back into their community, not giving it to brokers. How far off am I in that kind of, very rough analysis of what would happen to the money and what would stimulate the economy?
Well, I think you're potentially right on the higher end folks there in looking at the effects of reduced taxes. It's unclear that I'm going to spend that additional money in the state. I might, but I might not. I think what's important to remember and that there something that is not contested is both taxes and spending do matter. If I could hold spending constant, I could hold the quality of public services constant, decreasing taxes has some positive economic effect. Now, we might argue about the magnitude of that effect, but there is some positive effect. Likewise, holding taxes constant, if I can increase the valuable public services that the state or the federal government provide, I think you'd also see some positive economic effect. And I think that's the key. You can't look at taxes just in isolation. You have to look at the valuable services that are provided with the dollars. And you have to look at all those other factors. Taxes are but one of many factors that affect a company's relocation decisions, for example. Cost of labor, real estate and cost of real estate, the infrastructure, the quality of life, the education system. Mm-hmm. I'm a professor at a state university. The education system, the students that we provide is an important factor for companies when they're looking to relocate here or to expand in North Carolina as well. So certainly not a clear, easy issue. And you have to look at it more in a holistic way, I think.
Laura Leslie, three packages are... Very briefly. This is Stanley Black.
Yeah, Stanley Black saying, Roby has pointed out that what we're doing is we're cutting taxes and we're cutting spending at the same time in the state. And there's no doubt but what that's going to reduce the size of the state's economy.
And Laura Leslie, you've got about 30 seconds left. Three packages rattling about in the Capitol. One of them has passed the House. What's next?
And that is anybody's guess. The House plan has been sent over to the Senate. If I had to guess, I would guess that the Senate will simply strip out what the House has in and put in what they want. And then we're going to be fighting over this. But there's a problem because they have to figure this out before they can figure out the budget, because you can't have a budget until you know how much you've got to spend. So it could be a long few weeks here in Raleigh.
All right. We'll stay tuned. Laura Leslie, thank you so much for being on the program.
Thanks.
Laura Leslie, WRAL's Capitol Bureau Chief. John Hood was with us, president of the John Locke Foundation, Farrell Guillory, professor of the practice of journalism and director of the program of public life at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Roby Sawyers is a professor in the Poole College of Management at North Carolina State University. And Stanley Black, emeritus professor of economics at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks. Thank you.
Coming up next, Lionel Shriver about her newest book, Big Brother. Stay tuned.